Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
You're listening to the Inside Syracuse Basketball Podcast, presented by Krause Health, the exclusive healthcare partner of Syracuse Athletics.
Well, welcome back to another edition of the Inside Syracuse Basketball Podcast. Joining us today is a very special guest as we continue our trip through Jim Boeheim's coaching career at Syracuse University, leading up to Saturday's big ceremony at the Dome on February 24th. We have a member of Jim Boeheim's first recruiting class as a head coach, a guy who was, you know, part of that first freshman class, along with Roosevelt Bowie and Lewis Orr. Dr. Hal Cohen is joining us today. Hal, it's great to have you here.
Well, thanks for having me. This is a special week leading up to Coach Boeheim's day, and I'm looking forward to today.
Yeah, I was wondering, have you been talking with former teammates or any other former Syracuse players who are, you know, making plans on coming into town?
Yeah, I'm coming up, and I've been trying to get a hold of people to see who else is coming. It'll be a nice reunion. You know, we used to have alumni days, you know, back in the old days, you know, when, as we'll get into it, but Coach Boeheim, you know, a lot of the recruits were local, you know, Rochester and Utica and Buffalo and New York and Binghamton type thing. And then you graduate and you stayed around the town, you know, and then so when you had alumni games, everybody was there. But now everybody goes to the pros, so nobody, it's hard to get an alumni game. So I'm looking forward to it.
What's the first thing you think of when you think to Jim Boeheim as a coach, especially as a coach when you're coming into the program? So really, he's going to be a first-time head coach.
Yeah, I mean, now looking back, it's just been an amazing career for him, and I'm very happy for him that now he can relax a little bit. And I got involved with the Syracuse basketball early on because you know, back in the day, there was no AAU. And so you went to the camp. So I went to the Big Orange camp, and it was the great Coach Danforth was the coach, but Coach Boeheim really kind of ran the camp, and he was looking at all the players, and Coach Danforth would come in and give a lecture and go somewhere. I don't know where he went, but so anyway, we kind of knew him the best. And so my sophomore year and junior, I went to camp there, and I actually signed to go to Syracuse with Coach Danforth. And then I guess when Coach Boeheim became the head coach, I guess he had to sort of re-recruit me, which I just got this call and saying, hey, this is Coach Boeheim. Do you still want to come to Syracuse? And I said, yeah, okay. That was my recruiting process. So no, but no, really just, I mean, amazing career for him. And I mean, I'm not only on the court, but off the court with all those philanthropic activities. And so I'm very happy for him. And he's just done an amazing job.
What was he like as a coach back then? Was he strict? Was he a player's coach? This is first time head coach. I don't know whether he's going to be strict or he's so young and knows all you guys on a different level. Maybe he's more of a player's coach.
Yeah, no, I don't, you know, I think when people think of him as a fiery guy, well, we'll get into a couple of fiery moments later on, but I think in general, he was very well organized, had great practices, and I think he delegated a lot of the, you know, we had great assistant coaches, Coach Fine, Coach Patino, Coach Malone. So, you know, that was all kind of broken up, and he was kind of overseeing things, which I think actually turned out to be a great thing because I think as a head coach, trying to be best friends with everybody, you know, to try to keep everybody happy is a hard thing to do. So if you can kind of get the assistant coaches to kind of handle, you know, like Coach Pitino was with the guards, Coach Pine was with the centers, and so, you know, he at least for me, at least the first few years, it was very easy, kind of easy going, and then we got into some things with the referees and sports writers. We got into that pretty early on, and which we can get into at some point here, but I don't remember him. You know, I mean, it's a long time ago, but I don't really remember him yelling at me or you know, maybe got on other people or but I really don't remember him being that way. Or if you made a mistake, you yanked you out of the game. At that time, I don't remember him. You know, he was pretty easy going and kind of figured things out, and it was nice to see him. I mean, he actually, you know, looking back, how he kind of evolved over those. Even the first 4 years, and it was I mean, it was very kind of professional like, you know, it was you know, you come to practice and you had the routine down, and you know, you broke things down early, you know, very organized, and then you know, he's just a very smart guy, and I looking back, I see how he learned. You know, through each year, there was always some controversy. You know, the first year he had to figure out. You know, he's got this really our freshman year. He had a lot of good players, senior players, but he also had a lot of freshmen coming in that were, you know, he wanted that were kind of his players. Although he had recruited the other players, but he had to figure out how to get, you know, through that of getting the right pieces. You know, and. And he, I think he, now looking back, he made the right choices of who should be playing and who shouldn't be playing. And then you get into that was the freshman year and the sophomore year. It was the whole controversy about we had played Magic Johnson and we beat them in the Carrier Class. You've probably heard this story, but
It's
you
a good
know,
one. Go ahead.
they went to, we won the game. Marty Burns was our best player and he got 20 points and 10 rebounds, and we won. And he was the obvious pick for the MVP, and they picked Magic Johnson. And it turns out the writers were the ones that voted. So it was the writers at Syracuse that voted for it. And then that was a big to-do about the writers and the press conference, that one. Then we go out to,
For the record,
yeah.
I was not covering the team in
Oh,
1978. So
you weren't born yet.
I was born, but I wasn't covering the team. Okay, just so we know, Jim got mad at me several times over the years, but the Magic Johnson game was not won.
So then we go out to New Mexico, who's got this unbelievable team, and they got Michael Cooper, and you know, they're flying around dunking. It's just we haven't seen that before. You know, 18,000 some people in this pit, you know, with crazy people, you know, just fanatic people, and it was just, and we ended up winning, and same thing happens. Marty Burns, 20 points, 10 rebounds, and they give the MVP to Michael Cooper. And then one last one, at the end of the year, you know, this is just amazing how you, now looking back, how you, the coaches, this got to be a crazy business to be in. And although my father was a coach and my daughter's a coach now, so now I can relate a little bit better. But so we're playing in an NCAA tournament, and we got the ball. We're in overtime against Western Kentucky, a team we should have beaten. And Marty Burns goes in for a shot, gets fouled. The referee calls a foul, and then he's got to put us up one, and then he's got a shot to put us up two with a free throw with like 2 seconds left. The game would be over. And so the ref calls, another ref comes running in and says, no, he was fouled before he, you know, there's all this, you know, he was fouled before he shot. So therefore, the basket doesn't count, but we're going to, but he was fouled, so we'll give you a one-on-one. And unfortunately, we didn't make the shot, and we end up losing. But can you imagine that? And so that was another little controversial thing. So we got to, you know, that's a tough thing. And now I know as a coach, you know, just to lose a game is just, it's unbelievably is tough. So that was my first experience with him and the writers and the referees. And but
how did you react to that call? How did he handle it, both either right there on the court, or do you remember how, like, after the game?
Well, I mean, I remember the you know, the thing about the writers. I mean, the MVP business. I mean, just from reading the, you know, the sure. reports and the, I don't remember him. It's hard to remember about the locker rooms, you know, situation, but I remember now reading about the games and that whole situation about the referees. And what was funny was reading about how Bob Schneider and I forget who else was writing. They came home, they flew home, and they, you know, that back then they didn't have, you know, obviously there's no, you know, cell phones and no internet. And they went back and put the reel to reel in or something to watch that last play again to see what the whole call was on. Unfortunately, we lost.
And you can't mentioned, of course, Bob Snyder there. Bob Snyder, I worked with him at the paper for several years before he retired. He was with the Herald Journal back in the day. And he used to tell me the stories about that press conference after the Magic Johnson game.
Yeah. No, right? That got heated. And then there was this stories, you know, an editorial thing going on, and then the response to the editorial, then the response to the response. And so that was the beginning of, but the thing is, from a player standpoint, that was great. He's fighting for you, you know, although people may not look at Coach Bam and say, hey, you know, that's not his personality with the players and stuff, you know, to be the buddy, you know, he fought for the players, you know, he fought for his team and for, you know, and from our standpoint, though, that was great. But which I will, can I fast forward a little bit to the senior year?
Please, because I'm going to get there eventually. But yeah, it's on your, let's go. Senior year. I know we're more.
I just in terms of his fieriness.
Yes.
But then I'm gonna also show you a softer side of him, a moment, because we had a moment together.
Okay, let's go with fiery first. Senior year.
Okay, fire.
Yeah, 1980.
I hope he's not gonna watch this. No.
Nah.
Actually, I'm gonna go see him in a week after, or 2 weeks. he's down in Boca. I'm in Florida. We're gonna go to his conference. He's meeting with some people. You know, he's touring Florida and giving talks and representing Syracuse. So my wife and I are gonna go down and talk to him. So if this doesn't turn out well, maybe I won't go. But so you know, the senior year was, you know, now looking back, I didn't appreciate it at the time, but you know, we were, you know, number, you know, close to becoming number one in the country. We were 14-0, and we lost the game. We were up by 13 against Old Dominion, but anyway, mm-hmm. we would have been number one that, because some, whoever was one lost. So anyway, we get to the Big East. You know, that was the first year of the Big East, and looking back, there were 8 games where we were behind at halftime, we ended up winning.
Wow.
Which then reminded me of a story that I can remember the game, but I remember the game. So this, you know, to verify this, it was the Rutgers game at Rutgers. We were down at halftime. And Boston College, we were down by 17 points in the first half. And then we get to the halftime, and we call it the halftime discussions. And now I always wondered how we came back from all those games. And Coach Boeheim was holding a clipboard. And in these nice discussions, after we were playing horribly in the first half, the clipboard magically fell out of his hand and flew against the wall opposite him. And I remember it because I was kind of in the area, and I had some pretty good reflexes. And but anyway, we went on to win both of those games, and particularly the Boston College game, down by 17. And then I saw that we had won 8 other games. And I remembered those stories of the flying clipboard.
Now, to young coaches out there, this is not a license to throw clipboards. just
no, because. I don't think he didn't throw it. It just fell and then went horizontal. So he could get fired up during those half times. And again, we came back, 8 times in that year, and that was. So anyway, those are some great memories of Coach Boeheim.
You know, you took us to your senior year, so that means I have to do this. I have to ask you about the Georgetown game at Manly Fieldhouse. You guys have that long home court winning streak. This is the game that's going to end with Georgetown winning and John Thompson giving us the famous line, or infamous if you're a Syracuse fan, Manly Fieldhouse is officially closed.
Yeah.
And I was just wondering how that went over in the, how Jim handled that in the locker room. How did he approach that as a coach? Well, because I think one thing people forget, that did not end the season.
Yeah.
You guys had 3 more regular season games left, all on the road, obviously, and then a postseason to play. So yeah, there's a loss, but at the same time, he's got to keep you guys pointed forward, right?
Yeah, I mean, that was obviously devastating to lose like that, because we were up again that game, we might have been up 10 or 11, earlier on, and they kind of slipped away. So I to be honest, I don't remember. I think he was more, he was pretty good about focusing on what was coming up. And obviously he was very disappointed, as we all were. And, but then now looking back, it's like, wow, we were there when this whole Big East thing started. And nobody really knew what that was all about. But I think I never saw him, yelling at somebody and blaming anybody. I don't remember ever doing that. Mm-hmm. Or saying, maybe we should have done this or we should have done that. But, we had these other games, which was, I don't know, those who were around at that time, we actually, yeah, you're right. We had to, this was the first year of the Big East. There mm-hmm. was, I think, 7 teams. So, we had to go to St. John's the next game at St. John's, who was very good. And Lewis Orr made a layup at the buzzer, which was controversial. So sometimes those things even out. And we got a call. Lou made the layup and got fouled. And they said it was a charge. Obviously, we thought it was the right call. And so we ended up winning that game. And then we got to go to this Boston College game at Boston College, mm-hmm. who we were supposed to beat. And we got way behind. And Coach Boeheim, figured out. They had like 3 guards, little guards that were quick. And we had, big guys. And so he kind of went to a 3-guard offense, kind of changed the game. And we ended up winning that game. So we ended up tying for the first Big East, title, with us and Georgetown and St. John's, we tied. Then they had a coin flip to determine who would be the number one seed. Uh-huh. And we won the coin flip. So we ended up going again and ended up facing Georgetown in the finals and we lost again. So that was tough.
I bet.
But the other thing I think about Coach Boeheim, he had the weight of, I don't know, I'm going to ask him this myself. Okay. I never talked to him about it, but He had the weight of the, you know, of, for him personally, of coaching that team, you know, to, for his own personal, you know, like people thinking, you know, who's this guy, you know, coming in and his assistant coach now, you know, we were supposed to get, I think they were trying to get some, you know, all these great coaches to come in, but they didn't come. And so he had to prove that he could coach.
Okay.
And they had that pressure. But then we became good. We became the best team in the East. And so you had the pressure of representing the East. You know what I mean? Like he, you know, so he had that and because they're always saying they had the Big East, I mean, not the Big East, but the Eastern Coast teams are not that good. They're these independent schools. They kind of, mm-hmm. you know, play, and that's a great schedule, you know. So you had that pressure. And then I think one of the biggest games was the Purdue game, our senior year, same another senior year game.
Yeah.
Where it was Rosie against Joe Barry Carroll was the big offensive center, and Rosie was the center, you know. And it was, you know, the national televised games were not on, you know, maybe, you know, once a week you'd have a game, you know, on TV. So people weren't watching and not knowing about teams. And this was the national televised game, and we end up, we won the game. And that was just a great recognition, not only for Syracuse, but you were representing, you know, the Big East or the Eastern basketball. So that was, you know, all these things that you never thought about as when you're playing, you know, as a player, you don't really think about any of these things, what the coaches think. So
I know we're here talking about Jim Boeheim mainly because we're leading up to Jim Boeheim's recognition day at the Dome on February 24th. But I got to ask you a couple questions. What was it like back in those days to play in front of the Manly Zoo?
Hmm. Oh, it was the best. It yeah. was the best. You know, as I was saying before, I was, you know, in preparation for this talk, I was going back and kind of looking through some articles and stuff. And just, I got, there's some pictures of like fans, like on the court yelling at the referees, you know, I mean, like 2 inches away from there, you know. And, you know, as a player, that was just amazing. The packed house right there, everybody is, you know, right on top of you. And that was just a really special place to play. And obviously that, I think we won, you know, a lot of those games because of that, you know, the fans were, and obviously Syracuse fans from day one were, you know, fantastic, you know, and just, it was just incredible. And this was, you know, I think it was 57 games in a row or whatever it was, but mm-hmm. I think they probably won 5 of them, you know, just the way, no, I mean, it makes you, you want to, obviously it gives you, you the adrenaline rush of, you know, when things are going great. And then the referees, you know, if I'm going to call charge, I think yeah, that was a charge on the other team, you know, with the fans going crazy. So,
yeah, I'd like to get out of here alive.
Yeah, it was funny because I was on a committee or something, my senior year or something. They were talking, they got all these people around, you know, the athletic director and whoever, and going around in a circle to asking, you know, hey, do you think this dome idea is a good idea? You know, and I'm thinking, I don't know, you know, I mean, 10,000, you know, because the most we could get at Manly was, I think, 9,500 or something. And I was thinking, I don't know, 9,500 people in a building that holds 50,000. I don't know. I'm not sure this is going to work.
Yeah, right? Yes.
So who knew that, you know, 35,000 people would show up. So, you know.
So that was, yeah. Look at crowds like that, like, you know, when you were here, when you see the crowds that showed up at the Dome there in like the, you know, late 80s, early 90s, and wish that you had played in front of that kind of crowd? Or did you like your Manly Fieldhouse experience and didn't want to go?
I love Manly. I love Manly. I bet you everybody that you talked to, just that was just a special place. And just the, I just remember, you know, I lived in Shaw Hall, mm-hmm. You know, a corner of Comstock there in Euclid. And I just remember I mean, just like walking, I, you know, go to the game, you know, I walk down the man, I'm walking to man, I got my sneakers around my, you know, like tied around, you know, I got my sneakers and just walking down with like thousands, you know, people, you know, this is like, I'm going early to get to the game. And, you know, there's all these people just, you know, amongst everybody just going down and, going to just walking to the game, everybody talking and excited. You know, just it was just a special thing. And
that's pretty cool.
Yeah, no, that was fun. Can I throw in a Drumlin story?
Sure, I'd love to hear it.
Well, how much time have we got?
All the time we want. It's great.
Now, it was, you know, and now this is a little bit different side of Coach Bam, although this isn't that special moment. But he was, you know, we used to go to Drumlin's for our pregame meal, like at 3 or something like that. And, you know, we had steak, you know, we had this, whatever we had. And I was like, oh, this is great, you know. Cut up half of it, save it for later, you know. And but he would always show the game film of like who we were playing against, or you know, or maybe it was the last game we played or something. And he, Coach Boeheim, would, he just loved, this was the comical side of Coach Boeheim. He just loved the, you know, the reel, so he could go forward and backwards, you know. So you'd be playing like the last game, and you'd trip over the half court line, you know what I mean? With nobody around, you just fell, you know, or you tripped or you did something, you know, that you didn't want anybody to see, you know. And he would hone right in on that one, you know, like so you'd be falling and he'd go forward, then he'd go backwards. And, you know, he'd show you going forward to the back, you know, falling down, you know, with nobody around, you know, and he would say something like, you know, yeah, and don't do this. Yeah, but he just loved that. He gets in control and stuff. And so that was fun. And then man, and Drummond's was, you know, obviously that was a great place for us to go and then go to the game. And, but.
Okay. We got to go back to your high school. You come out of Canton.
Oh, yes.
Right?
Yes.
Who else recruited you? I mean, because I know Canton's a recruiting hotbed.
Well, the story is, yeah, Canton, New York. Yes, great. Best place, best town in the country. Best place to grow up. Great people, great teachers, great school. And just special place, very special. So my father was a basketball college coach at a junior college, Canton, ATC was called at the time. So he actually coached against Coach Boeheim. So when Coach Boeheim was the freshman coach at Syracuse, my father's team always played the freshman team from Cornell and Colgate, and it was on the schedule. So they kind of knew each other. And Coach Bam, you know, he, I mean, when he first started coaching, he was maybe 32.
Yes, he was very young.
Yeah, he was young. Yeah, he was young. And I mean, although he had been coaching, you know, the assistant coach and freshman, you know, that kind of thing. But so they kind of knew each other. And then that's how I got to Syracuse for the Syracuse camp through that kind of connection. And I think my father said, there's this kid up here in Northern New York that I think can play for, you know, for you. And he said, who's that? So I don't know. What was your question again?
Well, I was going to get to, you know, who else recruited you? I mean, did Syracuse have any competition?
Well, I mean, came down to Syracuse, Potsdam State, and St. Lawrence. Now, the only other people that recruited me were St. Lawrence had a player that went to Dartmouth, who became an assistant coach there, and he told the coach there, so I went there to visit.
Okay.
Davidson College, and the reason I went to Davidson College was the athletic director at St. Lawrence. You know, I used to go up to St. Lawrence and play against the college players a lot, or all the time. And he went to Davidson. He became the athletic director at Davidson. So we went there, and I don't know how. And Duke, but Duke wasn't Duke. That's now Duke. You know, I mean, they were kind of in the lower half of the ACC at that time, and somehow that was the other one that was looking at or something. But on my we used to go to Florida for my grandparents' house over winter break, and my senior year, we stopped at Syracuse to watch a game. And I don't really remember them saying, I assume they were interested, but I didn't know for sure. But when I got there, Coach Danforth said, hey, can you come into the office for a second? my father and I were there and said, yeah, okay. And he said, well, we have five guards in mind for this coming year. We need, they're losing some players. But we're going to take two of those five. And whoever, we don't want somebody that we're the third choice. We want somebody that's their first choice.
Oh, okay.
And so the first two that will said they're come, you know, then so that's how I said yes, you know. So that was how I got recruited to Syracuse. But there really was no other, I mean, nobody really, you know, actually, I'm thinking, who's the coach of Miami?
Jim Larrañaga.
Larrañaga, right. So he, you know, because he was at Davidson at the time. That's right.
Oh, okay.
So he was like 23, you know, 22 or 23. And so he drives, I'm sure he flew into Syracuse and came up to Canton, you know, it's 2.5 hours north of Syracuse. So he actually came and went to watch me play. And we, there was nobody, it was in the summer, there was nobody around. So we had to like scramble to get like five other people to play 3-on-3 so he could see me play. You know? So
I don't know if that was allowed.
it was interesting. But yeah, so in summary, really with Syracuse, and because I followed Syracuse, and Jimmy Lee was my hero, and Jimmy, I hope you're watching this, Jim. And so he was my hero, and I always wanted to go to Syracuse.
Wow, speaking of Jimmy Lee, we know he's a great free throw shooter, but you famously, you famously made 598 straight free throws after one of your high school practices. Is that right?
Yes, it is. It is right. I almost forgot about that.
I mean, how long did that take?
Well, it was about an hour.
How did it start?
It was about an hour and a half. You know, at the end of practice, as I think a lot of coaches do, he said, shoot, everybody take 25 foul shots and then go home, you know, go shower, go home. And, but so I was doing my 25 and we had, as players, we had this thing that if you make the last shot of your 25th, shoot till you miss, you know, shoot a couple more and then you miss, then you go. But if you made the 25th, you keep shooting. So I did. So I kept shooting. And they just kept going in. And then, you know, how my arm just kind of got, you know, you get stuck and ended up making 598 in a row. And we had about, you know, then it was at the end of school and, you know, the late buses, you had to, you know, wait for the bus. So all the people would come into the gym to wait, it was cold up in Canton. So we wait in the gym and the bus drivers, you know, they're wondering where is everybody? So they came in and then somehow word must have got out. You know, it's a small town. There's no internet. But somebody, I don't know how it happened, but somehow it got onto the WPDM, the local, you know, the radio station. Somehow the guy that was a sports guy, Con Elliott, somehow he came and then other people were coming and there, you know, ended up being about 100 people in the gym, you know, when I was shooting. And so I guess I didn't think much of it. And I figured if I did it, yeah, I'm sure somebody's done it, you know. And then I came to school the next day and my principal was sitting in the hallway taking the names of everybody who was there. And he said, you know, what's going, you know, well, I don't know if you know, back in those days, they had this place where they had all these books called the library. So somebody went up there and there was this book that said, Bunny Leavitt made 400, has the world record of 499. So, hey, it was like, oh, wow, you got the world record. And and that's how it happened.
That's unbelievable. 599.
Well, there's a little bit more to the story. So fast forward a week later or maybe a couple weeks later, there's a guy in Florida, St. Martin, his last name is St. Martin or something. said, "Hey, what's this about 598? I made 1700." So, I guess I'm second or third or fourth.
Yeah, you held the world record for a week or whatever.
Well, they didn't. Nobody knew about it. You know, I mean, it was, again, there's no internet. So anyway, but that was early December. So that kind of tied in, you know, that I guess, you know, that was probably helpful in terms of recruiting from the Syracuse standpoint, maybe, you know. So.
Absolutely.
Yeah. You know.
How did you, or did
oh,
you,
wait, wait,
you
can I tell, oh, can I tell one more little story?
Oh, please. Yeah. I don't want to get away of a good story.
Wait a minute. I got to start a podcast. Wait a minute.
Yeah, you do.
So, but here's the best part of the story. So, the next day or 2 days, the next day we had a game, and I go to the basket and I get fouled, you know. Now, you know, we got this, my gym's got small gym and got all these signs, you know, Cohen 598, you know, world's, you know, best free throw shooter, greatest person in the world. That was for my mother. I end up, getting fouled and going to the free throw line for two shots. So, Mike, what do you think happened?
I have a pretty good feeling. I
clang, clang, two misses. And everybody's like, what? What is this?
Oh, my God. That's
so
awful.
I always use that as an example of what this is practice and this is a game, you know, not the same. So.
How did you, if you watched Syracuse over the years and you watched your former coach for all those years, how were some of the biggest, or what were some of the biggest changes? Have you noticed any in him, the changes in his coaching approach, or yeah, I don't know if there's, you know, just did you see him change over the years?
Yeah. I mean, are you talking about the 4 years I was there or?
No, I'm talking over the 47.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that would be difficult. But I just, from my experience for those 4 years, I just see these subtle adaptations he makes, you know, of how to, for example, the 2-3 zone, you know, the whole thing about the 2-3 zone. Well, when we played, we played man and zone. But then I think he learned, and I agree with him. Why do you want to play on the out of bounds plays? Underneath the, you know, well, if you play man, all these teams have all these great plays, you know, you gotta spend all that time trying to figure out if this guy goes here, you go there, da, da, da. He just said that 2-3, we're just going to play 2-3 and on out of bounds plays. Mm-hmm. And then, then it slowly became, well, wait a minute, you know, all these other teams don't really play a lot against a lot of zones. So, and then, we had these two guards, Hal Cohen and Marty Head, who were not the quickest guys, you know. And we played somebody, maybe I think it was Temple. We were trying to guard these guys, and they were going by us all the time. So, like, quickly, so Marty and I think we take credit for really amping up the 2-3 zone and all the time, you know. So we quickly switched to a 2-3. So, but he always seemed to make the right adjustments you know, I mean, I just, and then obviously from TV, you're watching later on, I'm watching how, you know, how things, interactions and stuff. I, you know, that I don't remember a lot of that, you know, substitutions and stuff like that kind of, you know, back when we played it all. So.
And you have no idea how many clipboards continued to fall in locker rooms, do you?
No, that fell. And I never realized that we had come back so many times from halftime deficits and I mean, there's been so many games since that I can't, you know, it's hard to remember you know, what kind of adjustments he makes and all that kind of thing. But you know, and then there's the whole recruiting aspect, you know, I mean, you know, getting, you know, you know, that, you know, obviously getting the dome and a combination of getting Pearl Washington and then Tony, well, first that's another thing you had to deal with is how do you deal with a, you know, Tony Bruin was a freshman when I was a senior. How do you deal with someone that, you know, a great player, but wasn't really that ready yet to, you know, fit into the, what his offense and that kind of scheme, you know, and, but yet he's the, you know, one of the top two players in the country, and how to deal with that, you know, type of thing. And then have, then you got, then maybe that makes it easier for dealing with Pearl Washington, but, you know, obviously he was at a different level, but I forgot what we were talking about.
That's okay, because I got one last question for
okay.
you before we break away.
Okay.
Jim Boeheim comes to Syracuse from Lyons, New York. He plays here. He's an assistant coach here. He becomes head coach. He remains head coach for 47 years. When you look back on it, what is Jim Boeheim's legacy at Syracuse?
Yeah, just an unbelievable career. I think his legacy will be one of the greatest basketball coaches and minds of all time at any level. And maybe even more importantly for me was his outstanding contribution to the Syracuse community through his philanthropic work. And that's, that's been reported on, but to me that's just amazing. And it's set an example for so many people to do those types of work, you know, through his and Julie's work as well. So give Julie a shout out too. So, and I think that's what his legacy will be.
Well, that you're right. It is an incredible legacy, and it's hard to sum it all up, but I think you did a great job there. Thank you again for joining us here on the podcast. You know, the Inside Syracuse Basketball Podcast, folks, you can find us here regularly on Syracuse.com or YouTube. Dr. Hal Cohen, thank you again for joining us. And for everybody else out there, we'll see you next time.
Join us next time for the Inside Syracuse Basketball Podcast, presented by Krauss Health, the exclusive healthcare partner for Syracuse Athletics.